Football Monday. Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, I'll tell you how the Steelers just proved they're a hot mess.
Plus, we'll tell you if Triple G got robbed this weekend. I'm going to tell you he did get robbed. But we're going to start off today with the Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, man. NFL Week 2 was flat out amazing. Mm-hmm. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes tossed 6 touchdown passes and looked like the son of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Blake Bortles stitched a clown suit on Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots.
That ain't right.
Ryan Fitzpatrick unveiled so much swag in-game and post-game that Broadway bro Joe Namath tried to holler at Subi Culber again.
Stop that.
An overprotective ref stole a victory from the Green Bay Packers inside Lambeau Field, but one man topped all of it. One man stood above all the heroics and catapulted himself into the history books. Vontae Davis. Vontae marked the NFL weekend his when he told Sean McDermott and the Bills, "You can take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more." With the Bills down 28-6 at halftime and on their way to 0-2, Vontae Paycheck quit. The two-time Pro Bowler and Bills starter on Sunday took off his uniform, showered, and vacated the building formerly known as Ralph Wilson Stadium. The 30-year-old cornerback later released a statement. "This isn't how I pictured retiring, but today on the field, reality hit me fast and hard. I shouldn't be out there anymore." Davis's teammates were shocked, shook, and steamed.
Never have seen it ever. Pop Warner, high school, college, pros, never heard of it, never seen it. And it's just completely disrespectful his teammates.
Did he say anything to you? Did, as a veteran?
Did he say anybody to anything?
He didn't say nothing to nobody.
He left?
When did he find out? You know as much as I know. I know I found out going in the second half of the game. Coming out, said they said he's not coming out, he retired. So.
All right, get used to it, Lorenzo. This is the new NFL, the new world of sports. It's all just a reality TV show, a platform to play to a brand or a character. Anybody remember season 3 of MTV's The Real World? It was 24 years ago. The setting was San Francisco. They cast this dude, Puck, to raise hell in the house, and he got kicked off because he clashed with an AIDS activist, Pedro Zamora. Puck was as odd a human as anybody could possibly be, but he was television gold. He made The Real World a television force. Quitting used to be taboo in sports. It's the ultimate no-no. But in reality TV, quitting or getting kicked off is as commonplace and a way to launch a brand. Just ask Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, stop that, bro. Come on now.
All right. Just ask Ali Fedotowsky. Ali became famous by quitting Jake and The Bachelor to return to her real job at Facebook. She gained so much notoriety that ABC quickly made her the star of The Bachelorette. You think there aren't TV producers holding meetings about Vontae Davis right now? Let me tell you how crazy things have gotten. LeBron James and Maverick Carter are probably sitting in their TV production offices wondering right now, Vontae Davis, Jemele Hill, The Beauty Shop. They gonna work?
Chill, bro.
Vontae Davis is just a different iteration of Puck. Take a look at his 2012 work from Hard Knocks.
Okay, so the rumor is true, okay? We just traded you, okay? We traded you to the Indianapolis Colts. All right. So, you okay?
No, I'm gonna call my grandmother.
You gonna call your grandmother?
Yeah.
Okay. This hasn't hit the papers or anything like that. Okay. Well, why don't we do a little business first? Okay. Before you call grandma. Okay.
The sports world has changed. It's becoming more and more like Hollywood. Child stars are imploding under the pressure, the hype, and fame. Quitting is no longer taboo in sports. Vontae is an example of what happens when players stop being professional and start getting real. All right. Marcellus.
Man.
This is just the outgrowth of reality TV. These are child stars and they're quitters. And Lorenzo can be upset. You can be upset.
Yeah.
But quitting, I don't think it's taboo anymore.
Is it taboo? That's a good conversation. Let's go here. He's not a pioneer of quitting. He's the next iteration, the deviation from what we've seen of late, from the stars of the NFL all the way down to Vontae Davis. The breadcrumbs for this situation we saw a few years ago when you talk about Pro Bowl level. How about Hall of Fame level players in Patrick Willis and Calvin Johnson? Remember those breadcrumbs that were laid in those moments, which basically said that no player unconditionally loves the game of football. Not a player that has ever stepped on that field has unconditionally loved the game of football. You look at what football has done to all these players. It chose them. They didn't choose football. Let's go back to the pyramid of athletics, the pyramid of athleticism. It all starts at the top, and we know what sport that is. The lovely game of basketball. The game of basketball where if you get hit, you get 2 free throws. Not if you get hit. Coach said, go back out there. I don't give a damn about you. And we all have fallen down to the game of football. We didn't land on football. Football landed on us. And you don't believe me? Ask a Tony Gonzalez if he had a Charlie Ward situation. Would he have chose the lovely gridiron? Or would he have chosen those long baggy shorts and a couple free throws? We know the answer to this, so Vontae Davis is now highlighting what other star players have told you. We don't love football like you think. We love it for what it gives us until we get to that place.
You said a mouthful.
Okay.
You said a mouthful.
Let's go here.
And there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. But I can't go all the way there that people are falling into football because they're not great basketball players.
Oh, really? Jimmy Graham? You want to keep going?
No, listen.
Antonio Gates?
Look, there's a lot of great examples.
Flip it, though. Flip your scenario on his head. How many basketball players say, nah, man, I want to go play football? I'll wait.
Look.
I'll wait.
Football is a game for people with massive hearts and a little bit crazy. You got to be different.
It's very
There's
true.
There's no question about it. But there are some guys. I'm going to give you one.
Okay.
I'm going to give you one. Ray Lewis would choose
football. I knew you were
going
to go Ray.
Every day.
Yeah.
Ray Lewis would choose football every day of the week.
Yeah, and Ray Lewis also can't play point guard either. 5'11", 240, ain't point guard.
What I'm saying is, if Ray could have been a basketball player, look, you know who's going to be on our show later? Greg Jennings.
Yes.
Hell of a basketball player, went and played football instead.
Terrell Owens is a hell of a basketball player, too. But you know what? He went and played what he could play, which is the game of football.
No. Terrell Owens could have played college basketball. Greg Jennings certainly could have.
Right.
Again, so I can't go all the way there, but you've made a hell of a point. Let me ask you this question. Let's go. Let's narrow in on Vontae Davis.
Let's do it.
Do you have Lorenzo Alexander, no respect for him, you know, thought it was the most disrespectful act in the world. Do you have any respect for Vontae for keeping it that real? That, like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I'm not going to.
Absolutely, I have respect for him. I have more respect for him. Tremendous respect for him to have the courage to talk about what he really feels despite what the reaction would be. Think about what he did. He basically said, it's over. And I know it's over. And he went to a place where a lot of football players desire to go. Because I want to take you into the world of football that's beyond the cheers, that's beyond the boos, beyond the paychecks, beyond all the accolade. Just the day-to-day rigors of that sport. And you know what it is. We've all heard it in cliche, but I don't think we've internalized it. It goes like this. You play on Sunday, you get all this love. Win or lose, you're still one of the most celebrated players and people walking this planet. Then Monday is a recovery day. That means you can walk around, you can go to Cheesecake Factory, you can come to watch some film, we can jog around, but we know you cannot perform physical activities. Tuesday, we call it Tuesday Toradol Tuesday. That means all the medicine, all the injections, all the rigors of that game has to wear off. Then Wednesday, we may start to go at it again. Thursday, you start to feel normal again. Thursday, you feel normal again from a Sunday performance. The point of this is, no one raises their hand and says, that's what I want to do, Daddy. On a Wednesday practice, I want to hit my head 60 times into this 300-pounder and say that was just another day. That's not how the game goes. And Vontae went to a place where a lot of players internally, inside, they're raising their hands as well.
Do they have to raise their hand in the middle of a game? You know, maybe it can't wait till the end of the game. He was 30 minutes. He was 30 more snaps
mm-hmm.
and then he could have quit, and there would virtually be no controversy if he did that. He had 30 more snaps to go. He's prepared all week. Lorenzo and them are sitting around like, hey, man, we prepared all week. We trying to win a game. You still respect in the middle of a game walking away.
Yeah, that's where I will actually take some points away from his act and his actions. I rewind back to the first time I wanted to quit the game of football. I was 12 years young, and I remember we were – this is my fourth year playing football, Pop Warner level. We never lost a game. I'm getting 4 or 5 touchdowns a game. I mean, it's amazing. I'm getting recruited by high schools. It's next level love in elementary school. I'm the man. And I remember watching my friends ride by on their bikes and playing Nintendo. And I looked at my daddy, and I said, Daddy, I want to quit. And he said, boy, why you want to quit? I said, I'm just tired. It hurts. And all my friends are having fun, not thinking about my future, not thinking about sacrificing for my future. My dad said these simple words. You can't quit something you start. At the end of the season, you want to quit? Your choice, no more football, but you're going to finish what you started. If Vontae's call to his grandmother could have went the way I wanted it to go, grandma would have said, boy, you got to finish what you start, and let's talk about this at the end of the season.
I want to finish on your last point about, or your big point about football players and wanting to quit and how hard. Look, it is. Football is only fun on game day.
Preach.
The rest of it is not fun.
Man.
But. What I'll say, though, the exalted place that football players have in this society, to me, justifies the sacrifice. No pain, no gain.
Right.
That applies beyond sports. That applies to the rest of life. If you want to live in that exalted place, if you want to achieve something that everybody has to sit back and go, damn, that's incredible. When I see LeBron and a lot of the basketball players, I look and see some of, like, God kissed them at birth, in the womb. Mm-hmm. He kissed them in a way that we other people just don't get kissed, and therefore they're great basketball players. The same thing happens in football, but it requires a massive amount of sacrifice and work to even take advantage of whatever gifts God gave you. And so that level, the level of respect you can ask as a warrior and as a champion in football is unlike anything else in American society, and it makes it worth it to me.
I totally agree with that, the rewards you get from it. To get a collective of guys, 53 in the pro level, hundreds on the high school team and hundreds on the collegiate team, to all make that ultimate sacrifice. We all know we're sitting there looking at each other like, man, if you don't show up, I won't show up. But you did show up, so I must show up. No matter if I could walk that day, I will run to the ball. No matter how it feels in that moment, I will do all I can. To have that as a collective emotion and then to actually achieve the goal that all of us are looking at differently, but we have to get to one place on the same page, no other sport can get you to that place. That said, if we could choose the other way, path of less resistance, we would have.
Dak Prescott and the Cowboys bounced back from a disappointing week one, beating the Giants 20-13 in a game that wasn't as close as the final score. Dak had a solid night getting production from both his arm and his legs while the defense was downright dominant, sacking Eli Manning 6 times. Dak was far better than I anticipated.
True.
You know, I don't think they have things figured out, though. I think they have things figured out with Dak. They can feel comfortable with him. They still need receiving help, in my belief. They still need to somehow throw a Hail Mary and get a Josh Gordon or somebody in there. You know, I even thought a crazy thought last night. I was like, I wonder what if Megatron would come back.
Man, stop.
Calvin Johnson. I just a wild thought because they still need something. But Dak did make me feel more comfortable. Jerry Jones looked prophetic. Said he could run a little bit like Cam Newton,
and
he proved him right.
Yeah, I mean, look, they definitely need something. Everything you can, go get Josh Gordon. Stop playing. Like, just go get him. A Decepticon's not walking through the building. Like, Megatron, stop playing there. That's not happening. But they look closer to their ceiling, but their ceiling is so low. Like, being real, this offense, even if it plays to an optimal level, is anemic by NFL standards. They will not 20 points against a bad Giants defense, which one play is 64 yards from Tavon Austin,
off
right?
Top.
Off
yeah.
top.
Yeah.
So that means Dak Prescott, if you take that away, is, what is that, 15 completions for 96 yards? Paige and Sam Bradford. Anybody want to see Sam Bradford numbers? That's where that is, and no touchdowns. So Zeke still didn't have 100 yards. This offense, to me, because they don't pose a threat with the deep ball, is always going to face this fate.
I'm still not convinced off of one game. No way. I said at the beginning, the very first show that we had of the season for the show on Sundays, that I think he's still taking that step backwards. So he's coming off that sensational rookie year. Mm. Like, played well last night, but I still think he's gonna get better. And I have no doubt that he's gonna be a great quarterback in this league. He's a good quarterback at this point. That's all he is. He's a good quarterback at this point. But the ceiling is high for him. I think he's going to get a lot better once they get those weapons. Have they figured things out? I still say it's going to be tough for them to win more than 7-8 games this year. I just don't see it. But he looked good. He looked a whole lot better. And Zeke looked better, too. Even didn't get 100 yards, but he looked good. He was grinding them out on the ground.
Yeah, if you're using this offense as the leading charge in any game, they won't win 7 games. Like, offense, you carry us. Defensively, the way that they performed last night, the way that they performed 2 weeks, that defense can win games for them. But that offense, that's not going to win many games.
I'll say this, and I hear everyone say it. Everyone believes that the defense outplayed the offense last night. I somewhat disagree. Hmm. I thought the Giants' offensive line looked as disorganized and unpracticed as any professional offensive line I've ever seen. Chris Collinsworth at some point last night said, hey, you know what, they're not really getting physically beat. Yeah. They just can't pick up stunts. And when he said it, I was like, I'm not sure if I buy that. Then they showed a package of highlights, and I was like, damn, he's right. And so I just felt like Dallas's defense is overvalued because the Giants' offensive line played like hot garbage. What I saw from Dak, I'm just the accuracy with the ball, the toughness in the running game, and the creativity in the running game from him. He made some guys miss. That's an element that I didn't really know he had in terms of making guys miss. I thought they made far greater strides on the offensive side. The defense looked great, but I thought they had a lot of help. Whoever the Giants offensive line coach is right now, he needs to be in a long meeting. Yeah.
He had a week like them kickers did all week. Like, just like, whore. Lucky you have a job this week. I'm with Tony, though. It has been a regression to the mean since his rookie campaign in Dak Prescott. Like, if you had to say once again, are you getting better or are you getting worse? Where's the arrow pointing? Don't say straight.
Up.
It's not pointing up. He's not the same talent we thought he was year one after that campaign. Right now, we're saying we want to see that again, but we're not seeing it on a consistent basis.
But I will say this, though. He's a champion because of what happened last week. He did not play that well. He came out in front of in the national spotlight and played well, kind of like Matt Ryan did, came out there and shut everybody up.
Got called out by the Giants, stepped up. My arrow and Dak's headed up. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus. Let's move to boxing, where Canelo Alvarez and Triple G fought to another controversial decision in their rematch Saturday night. Of course, their first fight ended in a draw that had Triple G fans angry, and they weren't any happier after Canelo actually got the win in a narrow decision this weekend. Look, man, it's Vegas. It's always about the money. Mm. That arena's filled with Canelo fans. He's the real draw. I don't understand why anybody's shocked or surprised. Triple G's got to knock this dude out if he wants to beat him. And, you know, they're going to continue to make money with Canelo Alvarez, and people are going to tune in for a third fight.
God, that's the problem with this one, Jason. You're right. Triple G should have to knock out Canelo if he's going to win that fight because he's not the cash cow. Except he's the champion. And I thought you had to knock the champion out to get the decision, but that's what was proven false.
Don't nothing move but the money, Marcellus. It don't make sense.
Don't make sense. DJ Quick, I hear you. But here's the problem. Okay, this is why this is a robbery. Because we basically walked into a fight and said only one fighter can win on the cards. Because they've had two fights. And that means three judges, two fights, six cards. And Triple G has only won one of the six cards. Come on, man. One of the six cards when he won both fights. But now you're saying he only wins one of the six cards. Here's the biggest issue I have with looking at this. Beyond you got to follow the money and the cash cow and all that.
is that the fact that they said Canelo won the fight because he won the story of the fight. What was the story of the fight? Who ever thought that he would stand toe-to-toe with a brawler? He would initiate. He would be the aggressor. Okay, and how many points did he get for that? Because you know what happened? Even though he led in power punches, the dude almost got knocked out in the 11th round.
And almost.
Almost, but look, in terms of devastation, who had who on the ropes the most, it was Triple G. And if you want to talk about the jabs, Triple G was like, oh, you're going to be in my face? I would take a step back, back, take a step back, back, and kept hitting him to the tune where we saw a lot of Canelo misses. I get the cash cow. I get the fact that you got to protect the future of the sport. But this is what undermines boxing and why UFC is coming on the charge.
Now, I don't think this undermines boxing. I think actually this is going to make the third fight even more interesting. And look, Marcellus, the man got to the 12th round, and if Triple G had stayed aggressive in the 12th and won the 12th, I don't think we would be having this discussion.
Great point.
Canelo got to the final, at the end of the fight, and again, the narrative had been that, he would stay away from it, he wouldn't be aggressive. He got to the end of the fight, stayed aggressive, won the 12th round, put the judges in a position, gave them their reason, gave them their excuse. And if you're Triple G, you have to know what you're dealing with. When you're fighting against all that momentum and all that money, and it's Las Vegas, and it's built around the fight game, and who can generate money, and who can bring that Mexican fan base out, it's Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah, I get that, but Triple G, as he tried to steal the mantra, I fight Mexican style, you're still not Mexican. Yeah. Look. The fact that they can't sell this fight as much as they should, because this is a tremendous fight on paper and in the ring. But the pre-fight hype is always a little off target because, one, Canelo understands English but doesn't speak it well, and Triple G is doing better, but none of them are like a Mayweather where you're just going to hear it, or Conor McGregor, who's not even of the sport. You're going to hear it, and you have to watch it before it happens. That also hurts.
Since you said that, I'd rather see these two fight again than Mayweather and Pacquiao. We'll maybe get into that tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All right. To a big story in New England,
you ain't giving no problem.
Where the Patriots traded a fifth-round pick to the Browns for Josh Gordon. Yeah, people are already wondering if the troubled receiver can fit into the Patriot way, and Tom Brady offered his thoughts on the move.
It's really up to the individual whether, you know, what kind of role they can carve out for themselves. So that's kind of how I feel, and I'm not making, you know, I hate to make projections and expectations. That's not fair. I've never met Josh personally. Just like I have met some of the guys that have come in the last couple weeks. So we'll see how it goes this week. Hopefully he can work hard, put the team first, and, you know, end up helping us in any role that he can find for himself on the team.
Gordon's history of substance abuse problems is well documented, with the receiver only playing in 11 games since 2014. And one former Patriot, Rob Ninkovich, isn't sure the move will work.
I don't think that he would be a great fit. You know, there's guys that fit and there's guys that don't. When the guys, you know, there's a certain personality that has to be considered when you play for the Patriots. And, you know, I question his love for the game if you've been suspended so many times to where, you know, or you hurt your hamstring doing a video for some type of endorsement when you've practiced all week. I mean, isn't that letting down your teammate? I think that there's a certain amount of pressure and stress that come with playing with the Patriots and expectations. You know, he's in a place really where if they win one game, you know,
celebration.
Yeah. So there's no playoff hopes. Like there's no win your division. There's no failure. If you don't win your division, you know, you're a failure. So I think that the Patriots here, I mean, it's definitely a stressful environment. It's not easy to play here.
Ninkovich said a couple of interesting things. One I disagree with. I do think Josh Gordon loves the game. I don't think there's any reason to question that.
Yes.
I think he has anxiety issues, and that's where I think Ninkovich is on more solid ground. He starts talking about he's going to be under a whole different kind of pressure in New England than he was in Cleveland. And I don't think that's going to help his anxiety issues. And so when I see a guy with multiple substance abuse problems, I always go to, not that the guy is a terrible person, I go to the guy self-medicating. Mm. And the guy probably has some emotional, some maturity issues, some issues where being in reality is a strain for him. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's too much reality and too much pressure in New England. And I know that Belichick's had a lot of success with troubled guys. But this guy that hasn't done anything, you know, in years, this is a tough fit for me.
Well, to me, this may be exactly what the doctor ordered. If you talk about getting into a culture, a climate where it's meaningful, like that one win is meaningful football, instead of going out there having 1,300 yards and you look up, zero wins, one win, whatever it may be. You're looking in a huddle and you put your hand inside that huddle and that's Tom Brady looking across at you. Not Johnny Manziel, you know, and it's a whole different animal when you talk about his anxiety and what leads him to a place where he departs the game, which he does love. I think you put him into this place and give him leadership. You give him discipline, and it's going to go two ways. And I'm glad Tom Brady said it. I'm not here to forecast what is going to occur. I'm here to tell you that it can either go Randy Moss right or Chad Ochocinco wrong. It's just that simple, and it's based on his mental makeup and how much can he buy in to what they're giving him, because they're going to give him the proper platform and opportunities to go out there and ball.
I like your position in terms of, let's put him into a structured environment.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get him out of Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
this cursed franchise that ownership, executives, and coaching staff can't get on the same page. There's chaos within that Cleveland culture, and you're dropping a chaotic kid into that. Let's see how he performs in the ideal culture and setting. And maybe you're right. Maybe putting him into, because I always believe young people, men, whether young or old, want structure and leadership.
Definitely, definitely.
That brings out the best in them. And so maybe the culture of accountability there will help a Josh Gordon. I'm just struggling because I don't think he's the same. People keep comparing him to Randy Moss, and I'm like, hey, man, let's go get the tapes of Randy Moss.
Next level.
They're not on the same planet.
I get it.
But I have seen LeGarrette Blount, who had problems in college, had, I think, some drug issues that wasn't got to there, did well in the New England situation and culture.
Yeah, I mean, what New England does best is extract your abilities, whatever that level may be. Like, Wes Welker became a household name, but people forget Wes Welker was, what, undrafted to San Diego, okay in Miami, and then gets to New England. He's a household name, leaves New England, not necessarily the same, obviously had his concussion issues. New England has found a formula where they can get the most out of you. And if Josh has his head on straight, and is really going to buy into the team first, he's going to get every chance to do this. That's what they do. Fred Taylor played for New England, and I remember we had a couple of candid conversations. I was like, is the offense really that complicated? He said, you have no idea. Like, the option routes, the opportunities that Tom Brady, because of the chemistry he has with his receivers, you can look at Tom Brady, and he makes household names out of basically anyone. For a reason, those repetitions, he's going to keep you in the film room. He's going to make sure you're dedicated to doing your route, or you're going to get that Tom finger that Bill O'Brien and others have suffered. So I think Josh Gordon's never been in Cleveland, and someone was able to grab him and say, hey, do better. We can be better, because no one was better than Josh Gordon. This is going to be interesting to see how it plays.
That's a hell of a point, too, in terms of he has – they really, really needed him in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
In New England, it'll be like, hey, man, either jump on board with what we're doing or we're going to move on without you. The train's going to move on. That'll be interesting how he handles that. All right, welcome back to the show. Let's move to Philadelphia, where the Super Bowl champion Eagles announced that Carson Wentz will start this week against the Colts, his first action since injuring his knee back in December. Philly is 1-1 to start the year, but some people have wondered if they're rushing Wentz back after a couple of shaky starts out of Nick Foles. I think that Nick Foles has shown through the first 2 weeks of the season he wants no parts of being a starting quarterback. I don't think this is a desperate look. I think this is a look of necessity. Mm. Nick Foles doesn't want to be a starter. He likes being a backup. He wants to be a fire extinguisher that you pop open in an emergency. Other than that, he just wants to collect a check.
Yeah, in case of emergency, break glass. Yeah. Here comes Nick Foles. Look, when he signed back with his team, I knew that was his mentality and the way he wanted to approach the season. Respect for that. I don't think they're rushing him back, though. If you look at Carson Wentz, this is a guy who created expectations that he would be back for week one. And he's been practicing for 6 weeks. They say he looks great in practice. Non-contact, because obviously you don't want to hurt your franchise quarterback. But if the expectations have been set medically for the entire offseason, week one, and then you don't even show up to week three on the field, that's actually erring on the side of caution. So I don't see the rush job.
I don't see the rush job, but I do believe this. If Nick Foles were playing better, we wouldn't be seeing Carson Wentz this week.
You think?
I don't believe. If Why? Nick Foles were playing at a high level, they would be even more cautious with Carson Wentz. I know he thought, hey, I'm trying to be out here for week one, but I think their medical people had even thought it may be half the season before he's really ready. I think, to your point and to our point, Nick Foles' mentality has been exposed. When he signed that, you win the Super Bowl MVP and go on that run, and you're satisfied being a backup, getting paid backup money, he's let everybody know, I don't really want the responsibility of being a day-to-day NFL player. And it's interesting. I heard you say you kind of respect that. I wonder if you were on the team or if you were still in the league when you look across and be like, man, that's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, I respect it because he knows his role. He knows his experience, and he knows what he's capable of. And I don't even want to say it as it's a negative, with any connotation that it's negative. It may be a positive. Like, a guy's like, I've had to carry that water before, and it's like, in short spurts, I'm more than capable. But other than that, I know what this situation is. I feel the stability of this situation, and I know who our franchise quarterback is. But why rush back your franchise quarterback in this division, in this horrible division? They're not rushing. Look,
ego.
The Giants. Ego.
Ego. Yeah, Doug Peterson has a big ego.
Not that big where you're going to compromise your future and you just won a Super Bowl. You got Dallas in there that can't score. You got the Giants. You got Redskins losing at home to Indy.
In Doug Peterson's mind, it's not true, but in his mind, he thinks there are people to think, man, you just got lucky. He thinks like he has to win a second one to shut up the Mike Lombardis and everybody for good.
Well, you don't win it in week three. So to your point, like, which way is it going to go? If his ego is speaking that loudly, he would wait. But I think he's waited enough. He's like, and athlete mindset, hey, man, can you further injure yourself? No. Are you mentally ready? Yes. What are we waiting on? Like, after a while, you just got to cut off the cuffs and go get it.
All right, let's move to Marcellus's favorite team, the LA Clippers.
What you laughing about?
Steve Ballmer just hired Sports Illustrated writer Lee Jenkins to the Clippers front office as the executive director of research and identity, whatever the hell that is.
Oh, don't do that.
Marcellus, will this unusual hire make your beloved Clippers relevant again? And why didn't Clipper Darryl get this job?
the tone of the show just changed. Relevant again? Clip City? Chip City? We always relevant, man. Stop playing. Tremendous hire. Unconventional hire from the richest owner in sports. Can I say one thing we're best at?
Yeah.
We got that dough. Like, you talk about Steve Ballmer got $36 billion. He made $6 billion this year just in interest and investments.
And he can make bad hires like everybody else because he got so much money.
Man, this is a great hire. This is a great hire because let's talk about how internally it plays. Someone who writes exposés now can expose the personality of this team so that not only can we tell that to this L.A. market, but sell that to this L.A. market in a two-team market where we know they're going against the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James and the 16 championships. We get it. That is a daunting task. So why not control your messaging better? I'm on the Los Angeles Chargers Advisory Council with the ownership. You hear that?
Yeah,
I heard that. And one of the things that we're in tune with is the dynamics of this market and being in LA and how they export culture and how they really receive a sports team, not just in X's and O's and wins and losses, but in storytelling. This is an amazing hire.
Listen. See, advisory board makes sense.
I'm listening.
For executive director of research and identity, that's some mealy-mouthed, made-up title to justify the hire. Clipper Darryl should have gotten this job. And to me, what it's a testament to, and no disrespect to Lee Jenkins or whatever, but it's about the collapse of the sports media industry and the media industry in general, that a guy with this kind of career as a sports writer has basically been forced, in my view, to take some job with the team rather than continuing on as a high-profile, highly compensated journalist. Because, listen, if it wasn't that title, Research and Identity, if he got a real job, I'd applaud
him. He had a real job. You just don't like the title.
I don't like the title.
You said it's a bus stop title. I'm like, it ain't a bus stop title.
When is Clipper Darryl going to sit in that chair over there? When do we get Clipper Darryl on this show?
Yeah,
that's the only question.
All right.
You got to book him. All right. Reportedly, Jimmy Butler has requested a trade out of Minnesota. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Butler told the Timberwolves he wants to go to one of three teams, the Clippers, Nets, or Knicks, all of which have the cap space to give him a max deal next summer. listen, it's fascinating the Clippers are on the list because I hope it happens.
What do you mean fascinating? You say it like
you're fascinating because
I caught off guard.
I hope it happens.
Clip City, Chip City.
But overall, I'm not disappointed with Jimmy Butler. I'm disappointed with a league that just has player after player after player demanding trades out of town. As a fan, I speak a lot of time when it comes to the NBA. I'm a fan.
Yes.
And a lot of these sports. I want my superstar player more controlled by my hometown team. As a fan. I'm not talking as an athlete. As a fan.
Exposed.
I want Paul George with the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, I bet you do because nobody else is going to stay there unless you force them. Look, sorry, small markets. It's not even small markets because San Antonio Spurs, Miami, not the biggest market. Like, it's not even market size at times. It's just situations. Some places, hey, you better develop them and draft them because they're not raising their hand to be free agents. I understand that. What I like about this is the process. I'm not like you. I'm not sitting there saying, get off my lawn, because back in your days, you said that. That is you.
I'm a fan. That ain't a get off my lawn.
No, you know why? Because when general managers did the exact same action, the exact same result, you had no problem with it.
General managers did what?
In the 80s and in the 90s before the players and Michael Jordan starting this and one-year deals and LeBron James taking it to the next step of demanding where he wants to go, general managers had this opportunity and took full advantage of creating the teams they wanted. That's why we had Super Team Celtics, Super Team Lakers, and even Super Team Bulls. They were making all these moves, and you're fine with it when the front office does it. I'm fine with it when the players do it. And this one was done above board. Two reasons. One, he sat down with the coach. I'm not going to surprise you. Not going to be a leak to a website. And then two, I'm going to tell you where I want to go, and I'll sign an extension. Therefore, this franchise will benefit through the negotiation. I'm not going to make it a labor affair. We're going to get what we want, and you're going to get what you want because we're going to sit down and talk to each other like adults.
Marcel, I just want to restate it.
What, off my lawn?
No, listen.
What?
My father started taking me and my brother to Pacer games when I was like 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a fan.
I get
it. And so when Paul George just says, hey, man, I want out of here, as a fan, that bothers me.
Why? He doesn't have freedom?
Because I'm a Pacer fan. There's a Pacer mat that sits in front of my door. Reggie Miller's jersey hangs in my apartment. I'm a Pacer fan. I have an attachment to Paul George. We drafted him. We developed him. It bothers me when he just said, I'm going to bounce.
All right, you're a Pacer fan. Better question, are you an NBA fan?
I'm a Pacer fan and an NBA. I'm a Pacer fan first. I'm an NBA fan, too. But I want my players to stay with the teams that drafted and developed. That's just the way I feel.
If you're an NBA fan, you let them shuffle the deck, and I don't care who's the dealer, as long as I get some different cards, and I like it every year.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're joined now by a couple of former Pro Bowlers, Greg Jennings and D'Angelo Hall, a DB and a wide receiver. Play nice, guys. All right, let's move to Greg's old team, the Packers, who had a win turned into a tie after a questionable roughing the passer call against Clay Matthews on Sunday. And while the league doubled down on the call, saying it was so good they use it as a teaching tool, our own rules expert Mike Pereira says the NFL is setting a dangerous precedent by turning routine tackles on the quarterback into penalties. I completely agree. I think they're sitting around in the league office. How can we make this a football where, you know, it's all about the offensive players and no one cares about the defensive players?
I completely disagree. People always resist change. Every rule change that occurs, especially on the defensive side, we understand what they're trying to do. But still, as a defender, you can learn and teach yourself new habits just like you taught yourself old habits. No one walked in day one, know how to make a form tackle. Someone taught you. Now you can do the same thing with this situation. I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, let's
really?
Talk. Let's talk. Let's go.
I agree. I think that the league is, number one, trying to defend themselves. And I have no problem with them throwing the flag on Clay Matthews, but to try to make this and use this as the example of what not to do, I see too much of what was done right in this tackle versus what was done wrong. If you can show me that they make this call every single Sunday on every single player that does this, I don't.
Well, that shouldn't be the standard because they don't do that for every single call. Holding is not the same per game, per around the league. So, D'Angelo, you looking at me like you disagree with me as well.
I want to jump in this so bad.
Come on.
I mean, that's not a penalty.
That is a penalty. Stop.
That is totally not a penalty.
That's a penalty.
That's a penalty.
You've hit dudes before.
Yes.
You've sacked quarterbacks.
To the point that that's why I know it's a penalty.
And that's totally a difference with – What Clay's doing, landing on him, versus when a guy really lifts him up and throws
You threw really in there. Did he lift him up? Yes or no?
Throws that D'Angelo, body weight on him.
D'Angelo, can I talk real quick? Because
Absolutely.
Now we're going to go at it because you challenged me. You know why that's a penalty? I give you this example. Look at his left leg if you want to see with your eyes. But mentally, think about this. If Clay Matthews had to bring that guy down and Kirk Cousins in the simplest way possible, imagine Kirk Cousins is not Kirk Cousins. It's his son. It's your son. It's my son. Now make that same tackle sack.
He's not supposed to put him down the gentlest way possible.
Oh, okay. Now we get to our
football, right?
I'm setting your traps. So now you can send the message within the confines of the rules. The rules are you cannot lift the guy, and if you watch his leg extend and his body go up, why would your body go up to go down for a tackle?
He didn't lift him. He didn't lift him.
Greg, why would your body go up to go down to the ground for
so
a tackle?
So that his shoulder could angle him into the ground. He wanted to punish him a little bit.
I'm not at all trying to defend whether or not they should throw this as a penalty. I don't mind them throwing it but to use it as the example of what not to do, this wasn't that bad of a hit. You can throw the flag. You can penalize Clay Matthews 6 out of 10 times.
You can ruin the game.
But, you know, that's the problem I have. At the end of the day, you throw a flag that's questionable that you heard two former head of officiating crew say that's not a flag. Two of them.
But you got to
say hold on.
Yeah, it's different.
Right? That's how they saw it. That's how this guy sees it. My problem is the NFL, they never can admit when they're wrong. And that's what fans and that's what people have a problem with. If they said, you know what, we were wrong.
Right.
That wasn't a flag. And it was questionable. It was that head referee's job to say, well, make a judgment call. He felt like it was. It was. We tend to want to let those kind of hits go. Now, this one we missed in the New England-Jacksonville game. Mm-hmm. Now, he really put his body weight and came down on Tom Brady. That they should have threw.
But D'Angelo, it's not newsworthy.
If the NFL does that,
they do it all the time. It's just not newsworthy. We always see them say, "You know what? We missed that call." They give you the last 2 minutes in terms of description.
But that ain't what they're saying here
on this one, because they are right in this one. And let me tell you, you guys are sounding like the guy who got pulled over, and he's like, "Sir, you were speeding." Well, I wasn't going that fast over the limit.
No,
and he's
like, "Sound like the guy who never played the game before. Sacked the quarterback. That's who you look like right now."
I understand. Look, in my day, we could go head to head.
Exactly.
And then I know that they changed the rules, and I have to abide by those rules instead of sitting up there saying you're still in my game to have some fake toughness at the podium.
It's not fake toughness, though. That's what I tune in for. I want some physical play. I don't want to see people get hurt, but I want them close.
So when the shoulder gets separated, when the shoulder gets separated from getting pile-drived, then you're like, oh, too far. So, that's what you're waiting for.
So if you were the tackler and you hit that quarterback, you don't think you would have grounds to say, guys, I really didn't do what you're saying I did.
You look
at that and say, I really tried to power drive that guy. Is that what you see?
Yeah, that one was done with minimum intent, but he did cross the line in the threshold. He could have tackled him in a simpler, softer way.
All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings is back with us.
He don't look soft. Dude didn't look soft.
We had to send D'Angelo Hall. We sent D'Angelo Hall offset because I think he was going to take a swing on you.
Yeah, for real.
Take your lunch money from you. All right, we'll get into some comments from another Packers legend in a minute. But first, you all know Marcellus is that dude. Now it's going to show us the best plays from big guys around football. It's time for that dude's dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Oh, you know we got love for the big dogs in the trenches. It's time to give the unheralded their proper due, their love. Let's start with number three, and let's go to the collegiate level. Syracuse D lineman Kendall Coleman with the rope-a-dope. Now, watch my man Kendall Coleman, how he sets this up to get the sack. Kendall Coleman first, going down the middle of the offensive tackle. Never a good thing. The offensive tackle said, what's he up to? Why is his feet together? Ah, I got them ropes on the feet. When your feet together, they about to spread, trust me. And he spread them to dip that shoulder. And we call that dead shoulder. All of a sudden, now, offensive lineman, your hands are in the ropes. You don't have power. You can't push. You have no leverage when your hands are together. And you just got caught. And that was our third that dude's dude.
I like the rope-a-dope.
Look, hezzy.
Yeah. Number two, let's go to a big name, but not enough love in Philadelphia, Fletcher Cox. Look at this. Fletch Armstrong out there. And hit him with the fat boy Slimmy. Oh, yeah. Show him where we can move. Now, watch this setup. Whenever you see someone step hard one way, trust, they're going to go the other way. And does he go the other way with the big right arm? So not only did he set him up left, but he's going to club him to the right. And then get skinny in that hole, baby. Get little, get small, get skinny. Coaches always say, hey, the gap is not as big as you think you are. Fletcher Cox, you're number two for getting skinny.
Like that one.
And now our dat dude's dude, number one of the week, my man, David Perry of the Vikings, defensive tackle. Shout out to Greg Jennings. He used to put some work in out there. And this is Lambeau 9-1-1. Beautiful setup right here. He got his hands on him, chest getting punched, defibrillator. Uh-oh, Rampart. But you know what David Perry does? He grabs that wrist. Coach always says, you can control a man if you can control his wrist. He has the wrist, and now he gets kind of skinny. But the point of it is, look at offensive lineman now. Look into the sideline. Coach says, stay square. Don't look at the sidelines. When you look into the sidelines, you're out of position. Oh, yeah. David Perry now in position to bring down Aaron Rodgers and get the sack. So he is our number one dat dude of the week.
Can I ask a question? When are some offensive linemen going to be highlighted for their good plays? Can we get a little mixture?
Yeah, we're going to get there. Okay, we're going to get
I
there.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Didn't that last dat dude get cut?
Yeah. Hey, people out there, the streets are watching right now. With he is on the streets right now. He just got released today, David Perry. Not known as a sack artist, but our dat dude's dude of the week. So somebody employ him. Get the man
that
a job.
That dude is on the streets. He's unemployed. That's not a good sign. All right, to another big story. This time in the NBA, where Mark Cuban agreed to donate $10 million to women's groups after the league found the Mavs had committed serious workplace misconduct for failing to address sexual harassment by their former CEO. But the Dallas Morning News' Tim Kalishaw says the NBA botched the punishment, arguing that Cuban deserved to be suspended. On ESPN yesterday, Cuban admitted that an even more severe form of punishment was never even considered.
Was there any point through all this where Adam Silver discussed selling the team with you?
No.
Was there ever a point you considered it yourself?
No. I don't run away from my mistakes.
Look, I want to tell everybody, go hunt down that interview. Rachel Nichols did a great job of exposing Mark Cuban. And this is what bothers me. If this were the NFL, there would be major calls for Mark Cuban's job. He wouldn't be allowed just to cut a check and move on from this. He's out in L.A. getting ready to tape Shark Tank. They're in Dallas holding a press conference addressing all these issues, and we're supposed to be pretending like he's taking this seriously. And he sat on TV, and Rachel did a great job exposing him. He knew nothing. He's Colonel Clink or whatever. I know nothing. Nothing. I wasn't. Dude, I can't even explain. I don't even know if I'm comfortable explaining some of the things that happened in their workplace environment from an employee that had already gotten in trouble. Mm. He drops a condom on the floor.
Yeah.
A used one. Right. And they're still trying to keep his job and like nothing's happened here. This is all. And Mark Cuban, I know nothing. I was blind to everything. If this was Urban Meyer, there would be protest and picketing going on in Dallas.
Because you forgot who he is, and you forgot who Mark Cuban is as an owner. So what you're trying to say about Mark Cuban falls short in two respects. First of all, who is Mark Cuban, the owner? Oh, the guy who's wearing a T-shirt yelling at referees behind the basket for years, a celebrity owner who owns 200-plus businesses, who's on Shark Tank, and is a guy who is not expected to be omnipresent and to be all-knowing about all issues. That's one level. But here's where you really fall short, Jason, is the fact that he owns the organization. And in delegation of that power, he has lieutenants in charge who in this same report, and let's remind people, this report was conducted with 215 interviews, 1.5 million pieces of documentation, and everyone stopped short of saying culpability, and he was in the know. The only thing they could give him in terms of guilt was significant errors in judgment. But in terms of knowing, in terms of electronic transactions, text messages, hey, Mark Cuban knows this and that.
It's called plausible deniability.
I thought the same thing.
It's called plausible, and it's BS most of the time. Well, a lot of this stuff with these individuals was directly communicated. He was involved with, they got emailed notes of him advising things. And so you can't be, he said he never really even interviewed the CEO. He bought the team, inherited the CEO, and then said he never interviewed him. That's crazy. So either he's too incompetent to run the team, too busy to run the team, or he's just lying and shouldn't be running the team. But you just don't get to say when you're the owner and you've paraded yourself around for 15 years as the smartest person in sports. I'm the hands-on guy. I'm the boss. I can run for president. He was talking about running for president. Now we caught him with his dirty underwear and they soiled and rotten like a 2-year-old child.
Hey, look at you. And you just said crazy and Mark Cuban in the same sentence and wanted shock value from that.
No.
He's an owner who does interviews on the Stairmaster, man. Mark Cuban beats to his own.
So he gets a pass?
No, he doesn't get a pass. But here's the thing. If Mark Cuban was proven to know and to actually have culpability, they would have certainly went after Mark Cuban. Here's the thing. He was all in on basketball operations. He was not all in, by the reports, on the business side where
they got emails of him talking about sales and marketing and all that. Look, man,
he knows what his business is about, but does he know day to day? Like, this is the NFL. They blame the culture on the owners all the time in the NFL as well. The owner once a week shows up. He gives us resources. He gives us opportunities.
Sets a tone, Marcellus.
Sets a tone.
Yes.
So how come then the culture can change with the same ownership? We've seen that happen time and time in real world businesses and in sports. Same ownership, different culture.
Well, when they get caught like this and they're forced to change, and he's basically handed his organization over to some female CEO.
Cynthia Marshall.
Yeah, and so he's handed the organization over. And, yeah, she's going to establish a different culture.
Right.
But, again, I'm just not ready, particularly when you've run around. You're the smartest guy on the planet. I'm running for president. I'm Mark Cuban. David Stern's an idiot, and he doesn't know how to run the NBA. And now when we find out your underwear are dirty, we just supposed to look the other way? No dice. And we know for a fact, Marcellus, I'm just going to stand on this. If it was football, we've seen Art Briles, we've seen Urban Meyer, we've seen everybody. We've seen Jerry Richardson sell his team, in my view, for less than the kind of stuff Mark Cuban was overlooking in his own organization. Football gets held to one standard. Basketball, let's cut a check. We'll do it. And Rachel, great interview. We'll do a tough interview, and then we'll move on. I ain't with it.
We're locked.
Yeah.
True power is in delegation.
And true power is in being a billionaire and cutting checks to cover up your mistakes.
Jason, do you have to be the smartest person in the world to be president?
No.
Well, there you go.
America 2018.
Well, there you go.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. Let's move to the NBA, where Jimmy Butler demanded a trade out of Minnesota yesterday and appears to have his sights set on the law in Los Angeles, though not the team you might think. Butler actually listed the Clippers among his preferred destinations.
Yeah.
And according to a report from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, that has since been deleted, LeBron's decision to join the Lakers made them a less appealing option for the T-Wolves star. It was reported in Adrian Wojnarowski's story originally that Jimmy wasn't that interested in being a sidekick for LeBron. They've since removed that from the story, but I buy it. I buy it that what LeBron has actually created is a bunch of wannabes. Everybody wants to be LeBron, and whether they can be LeBron or not. And so I do think there will be some reluctance from some superstars, maybe even Kawhi Leonard, certainly maybe Jimmy Butler here. I think there will be a reluctance from some superstar to come play Robin to LeBron's Batman, because they all want to be Batman like LeBron.
Yeah, I applaud Jimmy Butler first because he wants to go to the best franchise in the NBA, Los Angeles Clippers, Clip City, Chip City. Why not know that before you even get there? But also, what's wrong with knowing your value? What's wrong with knowing your worth and saying, huh?
Overestimating your value?
No, wait a minute. franchise player Jimmy Butler is, and he's saying, I am applying for the position of CEO. Now, which franchises need a CEO? Not senior VP. And when look, you play with LeBron, at best you're the senior VP. You're never going to be the CEO. So he wants to go somewhere and have that impact. So it's time for a Wileyism. And this is what Jimmy Butler is thinking. Look, do you want to go somewhere and carry the torch, or do you want to go somewhere to light the torch? Big difference. You go to the Lakers, guess who you are? Another torchbearer carrying it from 16 to 17 in the shadow of LeBron. You go to the Clippers, woof, light that thing up, first in charge, legend of the franchise. Jimmy Butler, do you, dog, and do it right.
I respect him for having an opinion, for knowing where he wants to go, who he wants to play with. Everyone's not going to want to play with LeBron James. He's not an end-all, be-all. He's not for everyone. But Jimmy just decided where he wants to be. And we know, of course, as time has shown us, that wherever you say you want to go is not where you end up. And where you end up may be the best place for you, and you realize it when you get there, a la Paul George.
Yeah.
So Jimmy's like, and a la Kyrie Irving. Kyrie never – Boston wasn't on his list. OKC wasn't on Paul George's list. But Paul George signed back because he found out that was what was best for him. That's where he enjoyed it the most. And we'll see how the chips fall in this Jimmy Butler situation. But – it's not working out for him in Minnesota. He's found a sidekick who just got a max contract, who is not cut from the same cloth. He's not as tough as him. He's not a leader. He doesn't appeal to Jimmy and how Jimmy wants to play basketball. And he has an option. He did the responsible thing by telling Tom Thibodeau.
We'll get to the Andrew Wiggins part here in a minute. I just want to stay here for what do you think of my position that what LeBron has created is guys that want to mimic him more than perhaps learn from him.
You know I disagree on that. You have guys who may want to you have professionals that want to learn from him and get better. Like there's people who are striving to be the same person that they are and exist as that, or there's people who are trying to get better and grow. And everyone can grow. And I think Jimmy could learn something from LeBron. We all can learn. LeBron learns from even people who are under him. I don't think that's the culture in LA right now. That's what he has right now. That's the personnel that he has right now. Young kids who want to learn and grow with him.
No, you'll get
another star that will want to play next to him. And this isn't
a comment about whether LeBron has anything to teach him, because he certainly does. This is a comment about young people and just the delusion of youth, which sometimes leads you to greatness. Kyrie Irving, I want my own damn team. I want to be the man on my team. Whereas
Kyrie was in the right for saying that and feeling that way.
But,
yeah.
And again, I know it was a different league and a different time and less mobility, but a Scottie Pippen was, I'm good being here with Jordan. I'm good
winning.
Yeah, winning.
I'm good getting all the accolades that MJ, most of the accolades that MJ got.
Yeah.
I'm good going down in history and being in the Hall of Fame. I like all the things that come with carrying a team does not mean you'll end up in the Hall of Fame and be remembered for life. Scottie Pippen's going to remember for life. There's going to be some guys on first team All-NBA that people won't remember right now. But you'll always remember Scottie, who won consistently and who did it alongside of MJ.
But why the negative?
I respect Scottie for that.
Why the negative connotation when a James Worthy, who started this before Pippen, all those third?
Always remember him. For winning. Winning, you're remembered for winning.
But you're a third fiddle, and you could have went somewhere and been a star, but he stays still. Fine. Okay, respect. And then you see a Kyrie Irving who's like, no, I don't want to stay still. I'm already a champion. Let me go somewhere else and show that I can build this around me. Why the negative connotation for being a guy who wants to go somewhere and light the torch?
Because I think for Jimmy Butler, about to be 30, the opportunity to pair with LeBron, and maybe LeBron doesn't want him, who knows? But if the opportunity to pair with LeBron and do some real winning, with the, there's way too much upside in that for me to just sit around, no, I don't want to do that. I want to go somewhere to be the man. Seems a little crazy to me.
Not me.
Let's go to Odell Beckham Jr., who got paid this summer and has been on the best behavior for the first few weeks of the season, but still has a little fire in him. Check out this tweet from this morning. Walking in today to my 900,000 random PED drugs yesterday. It's actually funny how I randomly get tested every other week. Dear NFL, please stop sending these people. You're taking away from meeting times and film. Thanks. You got any sympathy for Odell here?
I did when I first saw this story. You sent it to me this morning.
Yeah.
And then I clicked on the link and I'm blocked and couldn't read Odell's tweet.
What?
From Odell? Yeah, I'm unblocked from Odell. I think it was the blonde hair comment.
Oh,
I don't like his blonde hair.
Oh, him, so that's messed
it
up.
It is what it is. So, yeah, I got some sympathy for Odell. But
well, I'm not blocked, so I read it. Let me say this. Look, Odell, your offseason this year, the substance, overseas. Yeah, yeah. I mean, NFL, I think it's always random. I've been the player. Look, it's been times I got tested 20 times in a year. There's the times I only got tested once. So I think it's random, but Odell, you gave him a little fuel if it's not random, but I believe it is.